All right, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the last session of day two here. Are you guys having a good event so far? Yeah. All right, I hope so. How many of you have yet to stand in the three-hour line to get your surface? A few of you will be joining me tomorrow, I guess it looks like. Well, welcome to this session, Microsoft SharePoint 2013 Sharing and Security. My name is Dan Holm, and I'm an MVP in SharePoint Server. I have been for about 6 years now. Prior to that, I was an MVP in Active Directory. So I spent a lot of time looking at identity and access management for many years with lots of customers. And I am, in fact, a consultant for a company called Intellium. But when I'm not on the road working with customers, I'm lucky enough to call Maui, Hawaii home. So this is what it looks like outside my office right about now, back in Hawaii. And on the days and weekends I'm home that I get to hang out at the beach, this is where I hang out. And the SharePoint community is very small, so if ever you find yourself on Maui, give me a shout, and I will be happy to show you my island. Why do I travel? Yeah, someone has to pay the mortgage for living there. I do work for a boutique consulting company, Intellium, and we serve primarily large Fortune-caliber organizations. The one I talk about most publicly is NBC Universal, for whom I'm the Microsoft Technologies Consultant for NBC Sports and the broadcast of the Olympic Games. And some of you might have actually tuned into my webinar this morning on our experience in using SharePoint for that environment. And also, I write books and articles for SharePoint Pro Mag and Microsoft Press. In fact, I wrote the SharePoint 2010 Training Kit, which is there to help you pass the 7667 certification exam. But the most important information on this slide is my contact information. I will put it up at the end of the presentation as well. Please do continue the conversation after today. We'll have time for Q&A during this session. But if there are some questions you've got, if you want to ask me about scenarios that are specific to your environment, don't hesitate to reach out to me through Facebook or Twitter or email after today and carry that conversation forward. I will actually be tweeting a couple of additional points during this session that I did not put on the slides. So you can check out my Twitter page, twitter.com/Dan Holm, to get those as well. So this session is all about SharePoint security. And from a conceptual perspective, these are the elements of SharePoint security, falling into how identity is managed, how authorization is performed, authentication is performed, and how authorization is managed in SharePoint, that is the granting and evaluation of permissions as users attempt to access content. Now, this is a lot to talk about, and in this particular session, we're going to be focused primarily on the authorization components. We're going to be looking at those elements that allow you to manage access to information within SharePoint. We have a lot to cover even with just that. And so we're going to look at the SharePoint security model. We're going to look at the sharing and security interfaces and features, particularly of SharePoint 2013, which changed the story quite a bit, as well as Office 365. And we're going to be focusing on best practices and real-world scenarios, answering the kinds of questions that I get all the time when I'm at customers regarding how to manage security and to make it work from a real-world perspective, how to ensure that least privilege is being implemented, etc. And last but not least, we're going to be giving you solutions to some of those common challenges and questions that I just mentioned. Now, during this, we'll have time for conversation, and we will ask questions in real time, so if something's not clear, or if you've got a question, don't hesitate to raise your hand. The lights are a little bright, so if I'm not seeing you, just wave or shout out. I will try to help you understand at which points it makes sense to ask clarifying questions, that is, if something just simply isn't clear, versus questions that take you to another level, which I call more questions, and also questions that deal with technicalities. Early on in the presentation, I want to get through as much of the fundamentals as possible, so we'll move quickly through that and just focus on clarification questions, just if something isn't clear. And then as we get into the more advanced topics, as we look at real-world scenarios and best practices, that's where talking about more unique scenarios and technicalities will make sense. And as I mentioned, after today, if I don't get to your questions, don't hesitate to email me. So with that in mind, we're going to start by looking at the sharing and security model in SharePoint 2013. And to share effectively, you need to understand the model, plan for access, and then configure access. Now, all three of these steps are fundamentals. I suspect much of what I'm going to show you in these first three steps you already know. but I want to make sure we go through it for a couple of reasons. One is I'm going to slip in a couple of concepts and underlying sort of internals that will help us out a lot later. Some real advanced stuff is going to be sort of going underneath the surface. Also, I want to make sure that we are talking the same language so that when we do get into best practices, you really understand what I'm saying because I'm using the same language that you are by that point. So we'll move through this stuff as quickly as we possibly can. And we'll start with an understanding of the security model. Now, the core authorization model of SharePoint consists of five components. That is users, permission levels, groups, and security scopes, and finally role assignments. We're going to understand these five fundamental elements by using a scenario. And the scenario is that our business comes to us and says, Alex needs to change the internet. Now, that business statement actually gives us everything we need to know to plan and implement security to meet that specific business need. We know, for example, that Alex needs something. Alex is, of course, the SharePoint user. And SharePoint users are objects in SharePoint, in your content database for a site collection, that are linked to the user account as defined in your authentication provider with a unique property such as that user's user principal name or email address or Active Directory account. So we have the SharePoint user as one of our core components. We know that Alex needs to change the intranet, and change then becomes our permission level. Now, permission levels go by many names. You'll hear them called permission levels, roles, sometimes role definitions. So they go by many names, but the most technically accurate name in SharePoint is a permission level. And the most common permission levels, as you know, are full control, contribute, design, and read. So we know that Alex needs the permission level to contribute to change the intranet, but we then need to identify that the security scope that the change is going to apply to. And in this case, it's the intranet. It's the intranet site. And the site becomes our securable object, our security scope. In SharePoint, as you know, you can add security to sites, lists, libraries, folders, and down to individual items and documents. Each one of those is a securable object, and when you set permissions on a securable object, you're creating a security scope to which a policy is applying. The last element of this structure is the role assignment. And the role assignment is the association between a security scope, like the intranet, a permission level, like contribute, and the user to which that permission is going to apply, or group. So we now know all of the pieces that we need, and we are able to configure and grant Alex contribute permission to the intranet site, which then achieves our business need. Now, of course, you don't want to be assigning permissions to users all the time. Your experience as an administrator certainly has taught you that assigning permissions directly to users becomes unmanageable and unscalable. So we all know that instead of assigning permissions to users, the best practice is to assign permissions to a group. The group represents a collection of users that share a common access need to a specific security scope, and the default groups in SharePoint include owners, members, and visitors. Owners having full control, members having contribute permission, and visitors having read permission at the site level. And so by adding a user to a group that represents a security scope a permission level for a particular security scope, we then can grant permissions, and when the user no longer needs those permissions, we can pull them out. So very, very fundamental stuff. And now we have configured permissions in a manageable way, assigning permissions to a group that Alex belongs to in order to achieve the business goals in a more manageable format. So those are our main elements of the SharePoint security model. Users, groups, permission levels, security scopes, all being tied together by a role assignment. Now, at this point, I'm just going to ask for clarifying questions. Is anyone have questions just about what we just talked about? All right. It's very fundamental. Now, once we understand the model, we can then move on to planning for this specific example. And again, this is a really simple example here, and I know that, so we're going to move through it as quickly as we can. But we do need to take a moment and think about planning, because as it gets more complex, we can't miss this step. And the first question we need to ask ourselves in this scenario is, what is the security scope for this specific business need? And in this specific business case, the security scope was the site, the intranet site. You can apply permissions, and by default, permissions are applied at the top-level site of a site collection, and you can apply permissions to any child site as well. As you know, SharePoint can also allow you to assign permissions to a list or library, a folder within a list or library, or down to the granular level of items or documents. Now, when you assign permissions, for example, to a site, you know that the permissions apply to all child objects through a mechanism called inheritance. So the role assignments applied to a high-level object are then inherited by child objects. So in this case, if we've granted Alex contribute permission at the intranet level, he's going to have permissions to every subsite, list, library, folder, item, and document within that scope. And, of course, you can break inheritance at any level in this structure. So, for example, we could break inheritance on a folder and assign permissions to that folder with explicit permissions that are then inherited from that point down. Very basic concept of inheritance. Now, the best practice is to use inheritance wherever possible. And that makes it more manageable, and you have less security scopes to worry about and to audit, but it also gives you the best functionality. And when we come back to our, when we get deeper into this and we look at best practices, you'll see a couple of places where just by breaking inheritance, you actually could reduce some pretty significant business functionality. So the best practice is definitely to use inheritance wherever possible. Now, we've identified the scope for this scenario. The next question we have to ask ourselves is what's the permission level that's required? And we've already mentioned the fact that there are four common permission levels: full control, design, contribute, and read. And each of those permission levels are themselves a collection of individual permissions. So the contribute permission level actually includes permissions like add item, view item, edit item, delete item, create alerts, and a bunch of other related permissions, the effect of which gives a user the ability to modify content. So there are individual permissions that make up these permission levels. And as we get deeper, we'll look at how you manage those as well. Now again, just to remind you, permission levels are often called permissions or roles or role definitions. All of these things are basically synonymous. You'll hear me talk about contribute permission. Really, I should be saying the contribute permission level. That's the most technically accurate name. Now the next, so at this point we planned our configuration of security. We're now going to move into configuring it itself. Now in SharePoint 2010 and in 2013, there are fairly common ways to grant users access at the site level. And we're going to go through each level and talk about some of the nuances about managing security at each level, but we'll start up at the site level. And at the site level, you can grant users permissions by either adding them to an existing group or creating a group and giving it permissions to the site. So you have a couple of options here. Now we're going to look at these in, the final option is you could actually grant permissions directly to a user. Now we're going to actually do this as a demo so that we can point out a couple of nuances in SharePoint 2013. Now the basic concepts here apply to both 2010 and 2013, but I'm going to do the demo in the 2013 user interface. Let's get back to my machine here. So our scenario is we need to grant Alex the ability to change the intranet. We can start by doing this at the top level of the site. In both 2010 and 2013, you go into site settings, and then you can go into either people and groups or permissions. Now, as you know, site settings is part of site actions, and the site actions button has bounced back and forth between versions. It now lives up in the little cog in the upper right corner. So we can go into site settings. And from this page, we have two choices. We can either go to people and groups or site permissions. We'll start with people and groups. And we can find the group that has the permission we need. In this case, it's home members. And we can then simply add Alex to that group. Then we get the share interface, which is slightly new in SharePoint 2013. And we can enter the name of our user, Alex. And notice the people picker in 2013 does predictive typing. It's much more functional than the 2010 people picker. And then we have the option of sending an email or not. And if we are going to send an email, we can include a message. And we can then click send, or sorry, share. So we've now shared the site, and notice there was a little tooltip up at the top that said now shared with Alex Darrow. Alex Darrow now lives in the home members group. And let's take a look at what it looks like to Alex himself. So I'm going to jump over to a browser where Alex is logged on. He's going to go to Outlook. He sees a message in his inbox telling him that with the message that I've given him, and it tells him gives him a quick link to that site. So let's open that up. And it also gives him a link to follow this site, which is the social element of the picture. And if he follows the site, then when he goes to his homepage, let's go back to his homepage here. He will see the sites that he's following there, and it will be listed on that page. So at this point, we've done a very, very simple grant of permissions using the People in Groups page in Site Settings. We also have the option within Site Settings to go to Site Permissions. It's just simply a slightly different pivot on the same concept, going into Home Members and then adding the user from there. So we've got that possibility. And then the final possibility is to add a user, to give users permissions directly. So we can click Grant Permissions, put in the user's name, and notice the top of the box suggests that we're going to give Alex contribute permission. The reason that permission is being granted is obvious if you click Show Options, and you can see that what it's really doing is it's adding him to the Home Members group. And from this drop-down list, we could pick any other group to add him to. Or notice we have the ability of assigning a permission level directly to Alex. So down here, we've got all the permission levels. Up here, we've got actual groups. So we've got either option for giving Alex permissions. Let's jump back to the slide here. So again, this is very fundamental stuff. It's very similar in SharePoint 2010 and SharePoint 2013. We add a user to a group, or we can create a group, give it permissions at that point, and last but not least, we can grant users permissions directly, although that's not a best practice. You know, it's best to put them in groups. Now we can move into our first really new feature in SharePoint 2013, which is access requests. What we've done so far is great if you know what user needs which permissions. But often we don't always know, as IT, we don't always know what the business needs. And so we've got the option in SharePoint 2013 to configure access requests, which will allow us to configure a site so that a user can simply go to the site and request access themselves. So this all starts with the share permission. Oh, wait, sorry. I'm jumping ahead of myself here. Let me do this other point. So in 2013, actually the first thing I wanted to show you here was there's a new interface, and everything in SharePoint 2013 really starts here. It is the share button in the upper right corner of the site. So if we look right here, we've got the share button. That's where it's all going to begin. And if we click share, this is yet another way to grant a user permissions. So we put in the user's name, we put in a potential email message, and again at the bottom, if we open this up, we can add the user to a group. Now notice the difference in this dialog box to what we saw earlier. In the earlier dialog box, we were in a more advanced interface that we got to through site settings. And that dialog box gave us the ability to assign a permission level directly to a user or group. In this dialog box, we only can add users to groups. This is enforcing a slightly better practice of adding users to groups, and that's a good thing. So there is this new option, and that's new in 2013. And then where I was going to head was the concept of access requests. So let's see how this works. In our site settings, under site permissions, we can click access request settings. We choose to allow access requests and send an email message to a particular address. Now, this address could be a business owner of the site collection, or it might be a group inbox or of some kind. That doesn't matter. It's just an email address. And what that does now is it sets up the site so that the user can create requests. Now, to demonstrate this, we are going to jump over to another user's machine. We're going to go visit, let's see, where do I have him? We're going to go visit Garrett. So Garrett is here, and Garrett wants to go to that site that we've been working with. So I'm going to type in the URL. and he should not have access. Sure enough, he doesn't have access, so he gets a page that says, let us know why you need access to this site. So he can type in a message. I need to be able to change the internet too. And he sends the request. Now, back on our machine, make sure I'm on the right machine here. Yes. I'm going to go into my Outlook. And notice I have an email message from Alex, and I can choose to accept or decline this request. So I click that link, and it takes me back to a page called Access Requests. And here I see pending requests. I see Garrett. And before I go into this request, let me just point out to you that while I got to this by clicking the link in the email, I can also get to this from the Site Settings page. So if we go to Site Settings, there is an Access Requests and Invitations. This is the exact same page we were just seeing. So this starts collecting the access requests for a site. I can click the ellipses, which gives me the call out for this particular request, and notice the conversation appears on the right. Now, I can actually respond to the conversation. I can actually say, I need to know who your manager is, and click Send. And then we go back to Garrett's machine. And he tries to go to the page again. If I can type. And notice he now sees the conversation here, and he can reply, Garth Forth. And I click Send. And obviously, he can also use this to nag me, so maybe it's been a week or so, and he can say, I really need that approval. And all of these are generating email messages to the address that we configured. So finally, we as administrators have the information we need to make a decision. We come back into this request, and we can see all the new messages. And we can then approve or decline his request. Now notice again, we get to pick either groups to add him to or directly assign permissions, which would not be a best practice. In this case, we'll go ahead and grant him contribute permission by adding him to the home members group. And he's now in. So he now has the permissions he needs, the permissions he needs to get his job done. So we've seen how to configure access requests. We've seen what happens when a user generates an access request. And we've seen how to respond to access requests, either through email, and to monitor those access requests from the Access Requests and Invitations page. Now, there's one other variation of this that's very cool, which is what if Garrett knows that someone else on his team needs access? What we've done so far on the admin side required full control permission of the site or site administrator's membership. But it's also possible for a user who doesn't have any permissions whatsoever to start this process off. And let me show you what that looks like. Again, we're going to go to Garrett. He's going to go to the site. And now he actually can get in, which is great. But he does not have full control, so he cannot give permission to anyone. What he can do is he can click Share. Notice he still sees the Share button. Oh, thank you. I saw someone shaking their head. I was like, what's going on? So Garrett comes to the homepage. He does not have permissions to give anyone access, but he still sees the Share button in the upper right corner. When he clicks the Share button, he can still invite people. So he can invite his colleague Robin, for example, the marketing assistant. And he can add a message. I think you should be part of this site. And he can click Show Options, and that's the email message option, blah, blah, blah. He clicks Share. Now, let's take a look at what happens to everyone else involved with this. First, we're going to go over to Robin. So this is Robin, who was just invited by Garrett to the site. Looks like we're not seeing the email messages yet, so we'll jump back to my machine. On the pending access request page, let's see. Come on, Outlook. Something is not working here. Let me take a quick look and make sure I didn't do something crazy. It's certainly possible. All right, so Garrett, I did click share, right? I didn't click cancel or anything weird like that. It might be just that it's going to take a second. When I get into events like this, I sometimes get impatient. Let's see if Robin is seeing anything yet. Robin's not seeing anything. Let's see if I'm seeing anything. I'm not seeing anything either. Well, just to, this afternoon, this is an Office 365 preview farm. This is still in the pre-RTM version. And I've seen some weird things happening today with timeouts. So let's just assume it's happening on a timeout there. What happens is Robin gets an email message saying, Garth has invited you to this site. The administrator, who is getting the access request, also sees that request and also should be seeing it in the access request page of site settings. The administrator then is the one who says that Robin does or does not get access and puts the Robin in the correct group. So Garth can initiate, the unprivileged user can initiate the request, but the administrator in the end still says this user goes in this group. And when that grant happens, the new user, Robin, gets an email message saying that she's been accepted and part of the club and all that good stuff now. So we're missing a couple of demonstration steps, but that is what happens. Can you force set the email address in the access requests? Yeah, I have not tried that. I'm sure you could. I would do it with PowerShell. Yeah, it's a property that you can access. So, yeah, exactly. A shared mailbox is fine. But just keep in mind that while the shared mailbox means that your whole team gets it, whoever approves or declines must be a site collection administrator of that site in order to do the approval or decline. Yes? Yes, when the request is granted, Robin gets a message, the new user, and I'm pretty sure that Garrett gets a message as well, but it's been a couple of weeks since I've redone the demo, so I would only say that with about 75% certainty. Decline, I don't remember. It's been a little while since I've tested the decline, but I do believe, I would say with about 60% certainty, email messages get sent out to everybody at that point. Yeah. Yes. Right. Yeah. Yes. His question is if in an environment the conversation goes back and forth longer to decide who someone is and should they have access, what is the next step to this, basically? What I've shown you is really the end of the out-of-box functionality. However, when we get into best practices, I'm going to show you some options for doing it a slightly different way that supports more back and forth. So hold off until we get to the best practices and then make sure that I address this specific scenario when we get there. Yes? So his point is that his question is related to the interaction of domain groups and SharePoint groups. So far, all we've done is SharePoint groups. So again, let's hold off on that because we'll be talking specifically about where should you use domain groups, where should you use SharePoint groups, what are the pros and cons, and we'll be coming back to that exact point. No. His question is, if you don't allow site access requests, does the share button go away? No, because what the access request is the ability for a user to go to a site that they don't have access to and fill in a little form saying, here's who I am and here's why I need access. Sharing is a whole other thing. And the share button is going to appear everywhere. Even if users don't have access, if I recall correctly, but they won't be able to actually share. So when we get into more depth, we'll take a look at all those scenarios. But as you saw, for example, Garrett did not have any permission to share. He doesn't have change permission, and yet he still sees share. And if you have access requests enabled, he can initiate those access requests. All right, let's keep going and hold your questions, because I want to make sure we get through the fundamentals, because I think we're just going to start taking tangents here. And let me take one last look just on a hope and a prayer that maybe something appeared while we were out. Okay, so site settings, access requests. I don't know what happened. I must have done something wrong. Oh, there's Robin. Oh, you know what? It's possible. It's possible. I noticed she was requested on February 23rd. I probably had already given her permission from a previous demo, forgot to take her out, which is why none of that stuff happened. That would absolutely explain why we didn't see anything happen. Sorry about that. All right. So when we set permissions on a site, by default, subsites inherit those permissions, and you can break those inherited permissions when you create a new site or after you create a new site. This is such simple stuff, and I want to make sure we don't run out of time, that I'm just going to assume that all of you, when you've created a site, have seen that little button that says Use Unique Permissions. And you can break inheritance in the site permissions page by just simply clicking Stop Inheriting Permissions. So we'll skip that. We'll have plenty of discussion about inheritance later. And so now let's dive down below the site level and start looking at the scopes of lists, libraries, folders, and granular items and documents. In SharePoint 2010, everything began with a single button that would say permissions. Now the button may say library permissions, document permissions, item permissions, manage permissions, but it always said permissions. And whatever button you clicked, you would then get an interface that looked something like this. And you would then use this interface to assign permissions. Start by breaking inheritance by clicking Stop Inheriting Permissions. You could then, once you had unique permissions, start granting permissions, editing permissions, and removing permissions. And if you ever decided that you wanted to stop the explicit permissions and re-inherit, you could click Inherit Permissions. And along the way, you could click Check Permissions to see what was going on. So that was the old interface. And all of these things required change permission. So for a user to change permissions, they themselves had to have change permission, which is part of the design and full control permission levels. Now in 2013, the interfaces are quite different. And one of them, they were completely redesigned. We've already seen some of them. And many people think that Microsoft's sole criteria for the new design was to confuse the heck out of administrators. And they are really confusing, actually, especially the way you get to the interfaces. So what I'm going to do is demystify these by pointing out that there's really just three sharing interfaces in SharePoint 2013. There is the share interface that you use to invite users. That's the only one we've seen so far. There's then the shared with interface that allows you to report the permissions that are currently in place. And then there's the advanced interface that gives you the ability to manage permissions at a more advanced level. Now, all of these interfaces are connected with each other. So when you're in the shared with interface, you can jump over by clicking invite people to the share interface. Or you can click advanced and get to the advanced interface. And all of the other interfaces are connected to each other as well. So you can go back and forth between them. But there are three interfaces. Now, the way you find those interfaces is just completely convoluted. And if there's a Microsoft person in the room who has any influence over UI design, please pay attention to what I'm saying and solve our pain, because this is just crazy. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you this stuff as a demonstration, and you will have this slide. You'll obviously be able to download these slides from ComNet, and you can use this as a reference, but it'll make much more sense once you've actually seen it in action. So let's jump back to our demo. And we are going to jump over to a new site collection. Oops, sorry. Thank you. Called New Project. Whoops. Why isn't that there? Let me make sure I'm using the correct URL. Contoso SPC, SharePoint.com, sites test. Oh. No, no, new project. That's correct. Why is it saying 404? Contoso SPC.SharePoint.com, sites new project. Well, that's nice. Oh, I guess so. This was working literally, but right before I walked into this room, I made sure this site was there. Okay, so let's find another one. Let's try and see if ESPC still happens to be there. This was from an older event. All right, at least this is there. That's a good start. The problem is I don't know exactly what's in this, but we'll give it a shot. So we've already seen how you share at the site level. We saw the share button, and the share button allows us to get a quick look at who this site is shared with. Right now, the site is shared only with me. That is a hyperlink. If I click that, it takes us to the shared with dialog box that shows us exactly who the site is shared with. We can then go back to the share interface, back to the shared with, over to advanced. And from advanced, we can go to grant permissions and back to share. So you can see how all these things are kind of linked together with each other. And at the site level, it's not really too bad there. Then let's go down to the most granular level. Let's go down to an individual document. So down here, we've got document library. And just so that I know I'm dealing with something fresh, I'm going to take a document and drag it in there. And we will click the dots. Now, when we click the dots, the ellipses, we get what's called the document callout. And the document callout makes it really easy to see, first of all, who the document is shared with. We can see that in the sort of middle of the screen there. It's only shared with me. And then we also have the share button that allows us to invite new people. So we click share. And we're now looking at sharing an individual document. And we have the ability to invite people. So again, I might invite Alex. And again, I can include a personal message. I can choose to not send an email. And I can choose to require sign-in or not, which we'll talk about in just a minute. Now, the permissions that we can pick at the document level are two. We can pick edit or view. What's going to happen behind the scenes here if we invite Alex is it's going to break inheritance. And it's going to set permissions at the document level to give Alex either contribute permission, that's edit, or read permission, that's view. Those are the permissions that are actually assigned behind the scenes. And these interface, we now can sort of start seeing one of the real goals Microsoft had with the individual dialog boxes, which is to make it user-friendly. The problem with the older interfaces are that they were very IT pro focused, which made it tough for business users to get their job done. These new interfaces are clearly aimed more at end users here. So we can click share. Once we have shared, notice the little tip up at the top. We can go back into the document callout. Come on. Refresh. Wow, my VM is getting tired here. So we can go back into the document callout, and we can see that that is shared with Alex Darrow. So we can start seeing that. We can also click the ellipses here and get to the shared with dialog box. Here's the list of everyone who has access. And this will show us everyone who's been given access directly. This does not show us users who are members of nested groups, and that's going to be important later. This is only showing us users who have been assigned permissions to this document directly. And then we also, notice, can go to the advanced dialog. So when we go into advanced, we get into the more traditional interface that allows us to check permissions, grant permissions, edit, remove permissions, or simply stop inheriting, or sorry, reinstate inheritance. So we've got all of those options there. At the folder level, we've got the same basic options. So let's create a quick new folder here for Project 101. At the folder scope, it's exactly the same. We can click share. From the additional dots, we can get to shared with. From there, we can get to advanced. So it's the same. Where it gets really strange is if you're trying to share a library or a list. If you're trying to share a library or a list, the share interfaces start disappearing. And I have no idea why, because most of us would assume that one of the most common sharing scopes would be a document library or a list. But they're simply not very, very straightforward. So if we go to a document library, notice there is no share command at the document library level. Instead, we have to actually go either into library settings like we did in 2010, or we start with shared with to see who it's shared with, and then we can go to invite people and get back into that sort of loop. So that's kind of bizarre. And in the end, that's a quick look at this reference here of if you're at a specific scope, how do you get to each of those three interfaces? The share interface, the shared with interface, and the advanced interface. Yeah, I know you saw that. Very good eyes. What I think you were seeing is this. Let me check. Yeah, up here. Wait, where? Oh, you mean up here? Very good question. Another weird thing here. This button is always and only the entire site. So that took me a while to get used to as well, because I'd keep clicking it and I'd end up sharing the entire site with someone, which was obviously not the goal. Lists or libraries are just a little bit weird there. You have to kind of dig to get into those interfaces, and hopefully they'll fix that. Yes? So his question is about the interaction of inheritance and explicit permissions. Hold on to that, because I've got a slide coming up on specifically that point. There was another question here. Yeah. Great question. So his question is, what permissions do you have to share with someone individually? So to share with internal users, I'll give him the transition king crown, because that's exactly where we're heading. You get to pick the scope, and we've already talked about those. You then assign permissions, and when you do assign permissions, even with these fancy new interfaces, it's still breaking inheritance. It's still like in SharePoint 2010. You can review permissions, you can manage permissions, and you can reinstate inheritance. So these are the steps that we just talked about and demonstrated. To do all of this, you must have change permission. And that is part of the design permission level and full control, and of course its native capability of site collection administrators. So those are the existing roles that will give you change permission, or you can create a custom permission level that has change permission. Yes. Great question. So let me hold off on that until we get to the inheritance slide. That's a good question. All right, let's keep moving here. What we've looked at so far is sharing with internal users. And this is possible on both on-premise SharePoint and Office 365. And by the way, so far everything I've talked about is both on-premise SharePoint and Office 365. We're now going to look at a feature that is unique to Office 365, which is the ability to share with external users. It requires no additional user licenses, and it doesn't even require a user account in your Active Directory or authentication provider. This is Microsoft's answer to Dropbox, to put it real bluntly. And this is a really, really cool feature for extranets. It is one of the things that, in my opinion, makes Office 365 a no-brainer for extranets, is exactly this feature, the ability to share with external users. Now, we're going to step through this so that you understand how it works, and keep in mind that all of it is manageable. So the answer to your question of can I control this will be yes, and we'll get to that. So you can share sites or documents with external users with no additional license and no user account. Now notice the scope that's missing. You cannot share a list or library with external users. You can only share the most broad level, which is the site, or the most granular level, which is an individual item or document. In order to share with an external user, you don't just need change permission, you need full control. So there's it's not something that your normal contributors or even designers are going to be able to do. It requires full control permission, and as we'll see later, you as an administrator can turn it on or off completely. And in order to do this, you can either share a site or a document, and we'll look at each of those options. So let's jump back to our environment. And let's say that we want to share this entire new project site, which is the site we're on, ESPC, with this external user named Dan Holm, who doesn't even exist in our Active Directory. We click Share, and we enter an external email address, danholm@gmail.com. We put in an optional email message, and notice it is going to give him edit permission, and that is because he's actually getting put in the ESPC members group. That's what's happening there. And I think this is an old demo, so the normally would be contribute. I had done some tweaking to this. But we're putting in an external email address, and we are sending a message to that. So let's send that out. And let's see if the gods of timing and live demos are with us. I'm going to jump to my Gmail. Man, my hands are cold. It's so cold in here. All right. All right. Nope, that's an old message, so we haven't quite gotten it yet. This is done with timer jobs, so it does take a little bit of time. So while we wait and see if it appears, I'll describe to you what happens. The email message goes to the user, and in this case, the user will need to be authenticated. When you're sharing a site, the user must be authenticated, but doesn't require an account in your Active Directory. Instead, what happens is the user's email message, they click a link, it takes them to the site that you've shared, and it asks them to sign in with whatever their Microsoft account is. So my Microsoft account might be danholm@live.com or danholm@outlook.com. And at that moment, when I sign in with that Microsoft account, it associates my Microsoft account with the email address that was used, and I'm now able to get into the site. And if I don't have a Microsoft account, it lets me sign up for one on the spot. So you're sharing with an external user, they're getting an email message, and then they are going to be taken through the process of creating a Microsoft account. Now, the gods of live timing are not with me, so we'll just keep going. Now, again, you can share a site. The other scope you can share is an individual item or document. And this gets really interesting. So we're going to go down to the International Marketing Strategies document, and we're going to share this also with Dan Holm. We can choose either view or edit permissions. Let's keep edit for the moment. Under show options, we can choose not to send an email message. And notice the difference in this particular interface. When we shared a site, we did not have this option. When we share a document, we do. If we leave the default, which is require sign-in, the behavior is exactly what I described earlier. The user is brought to the document. Before they can access it, they have to sign in with their Microsoft account. If they don't have one, they have to create one, and then it associates them and allows them in. So that's the same behavior. So far, so good? Okay. What gets really kind of interesting is when you uncheck that box. When you uncheck that box to require a sign-in, and let's go ahead and share this, and we'll see if the timing gods start working with us here. Okay. We just got the site email message. Let's see if we get the document email message. So this was the site message that I was waiting to see. And if this user gets it, they are brought to a sign-in where they can sign in or create an account, just like I said. Now let's give this a second, because I really hope we can get the next message in. All right, we'll wait. What we've done by deselecting require sign-in is we've created what is called a guest link. The external user will be sent a URL, and the URL will include one of those long, crazy strings that itself is the access token for that document. So just by clicking the link, the user is going to be able to get to the document. They will not be asked to sign in with a Microsoft account. They can choose to, if they have one, the optional to sign in, but it is no longer required to sign in. Let's see if this has come in yet. Oh, yeah, hold on. I know there are going to be questions, but just hold on. Let me say a few more words and see if I can pre-answer some of those questions. So with the guest links, it is the URL that provides the access. Now, that means that anyone with that URL is going to be able to get the same access. It is not, there's no authentication of the user happening at all. It's just a link. So there is a security concern that if you share it with Dan Holm, he might share it with someone else. He might tweet it, and everyone can get to it. But that's the option. You either require authentication or you don't. And if you're not requiring authentication, then anyone can get to that link. Now, let me continue along a little bit here. I'm hoping this message comes in. To manage all of this, you as an administrator can turn on or turn off external sharing in the SharePoint Administration Center. Now, for all plans of Office 365, you can turn off or turn on external sharing at the tenancy level. In the e-plans of Office 365, you can get more granular and turn on and off sharing at the site collection level. This is one of those under-documented differences between the p-plans and the e-plans that drive me crazy. There are so many of these little differences that if you start with a p-plan, you end up knocking your head against a wall saying, oh, I didn't know that wasn't included. This is one of those things. The e-plans gives you more granular management of sharing. So let's take a look at these. I haven't forgot that some people have questions. We've got the email, so let's take a look at that first. So we got the email that says, here's the document you need. Notice it says, sign in for the best editing experience, but I can also just click the URL. And let me zoom in so you can see what that URL actually is. Whoops, I don't have my zoom. So we'll just open it up. Notice the crazy long URL there that includes guest access token. I know that's hard to see, but that's there. And when the user accesses documents with a guest link, there's one other very big difference, which is they can only access it in Office web apps. So the user is able to view or edit based on the permission you gave them, but only in Office web apps. With a guest link, they cannot download the document and they cannot open it in their local clients. So there is a little bit of security from that perspective. But with a sign-in, it's normal. They can upload, download, whatever you allow them to do. Now let's jump back to the administration story. I'm sorry, it's a little fragmented because of the timing. So let me go just a few more steps here. So if we go to our tenancy settings, up here, very first thing, external sharing. Here are our three options. Option one is no external sharing, period. Option two is external sharing only authenticated, no guest links. Option three is authenticated or guest links, and that's done at the tenancy level of all Office 365 plans. On the e-plans, we can take an individual site collection and modify the sharing even further. So we can take our ESPC site, for example, click sharing, and we have the same options there to either not allow sharing, only authenticated, or authenticated and guest links. And you can only do the maximum allowed by the tenancy. So if the tenancy turns off guest links, you cannot turn on guest links at the site collection. So the tenancy rules site collection can restrict even further. And now we've seen that piece of the administrative story. There's one other piece I want to show you, which is if we go to site settings. Notice we are now seeing the external user invitations on that same access request page. So we're able to see the users who have been invited and have signed in using those invitations. Each of these are represented behind the scenes by what's called a guest contributor account that I'll show you later. And these invitations are only valid for a certain period of time. The default is 7 days. And you can tweak that in PowerShell. Well, last couple of quick notes on this, and then I'll answer your questions. This external sharing is a very powerful capability. Unlike some of the competitors in this space, Microsoft does understand the enterprise enough to say, we know people are going to want to control it, turn it on and off. So as an administrator, you've got some control. You also have a control down at the user level because only users with full control can share with external users. Please read the documentation on this. The Office 365 documentation for IT pros has some good information on how all this works. Make sure you know how to revoke permissions to external users. There are some specific steps for doing that. For how to disable and delete guest links. So going in and taking out those guest links and then disabling and re-enabling sharing. If you ever decide you want to turn it off for a while and then turn it back on, there's nuances to all of those things. The key articles I've got linked on the slide deck, so when you download the slide deck, you can see those. Now, the last note on this sharing that I want to take a moment on before we pause for questions are the scopes. Just as a reminder, if you're sharing with internal users, you can share at the site, list, library, folder, item, and document level. With external users, it's only the site or the document. With guest links, it's only the document. And at that point, they can only do what you give them permission to using Office web apps. All right, so there were a couple of questions. Sorry to make you wait. Yes. How does it work with search? Auditing. The auditing will show the user's views and accesses because that association between the user's email address is still there. Search isn't going to work because the user can't get to search. If you've only done a guest link, you're only giving them access to a document. They can't search for it. Ask me after the break, because we're going to start running out of time. Yes. His question is, one of my slides said I discourage Active Directory groups. We're going to come to that in just a second as well. So let's keep moving here, because I really am afraid we're going to run out of time. We're now going to sort of go to the next level. We started with fundamentals. We then went configuring. We're now going to go yet deeper and look at each of these components and some of the nuances, including answers to a lot of your questions here. The first thing we want to talk about are users. And users, as I mentioned earlier, are defined in the site collection. They are an object at the site collection level. So wherever in a site collection you need a user, even down at a document level, the user itself is created at the top of the site collection in a hidden list called the users list. Now, this is one of the things that I want to tweet here that's not in the slide deck, so let me tweet it. And again, if you go to twitter.com/danholm, you'll be able to get this, and you can email me as well. So I'm going to tweet this address. Let me copy and paste it for myself as well. Oh, that's good. So there are two ways to see the list of users at the site collection level. The first is an address that starts with your site collection and then goes to catalogusers.aspx. And this is called the user information list. And you'll see here that we're seeing every single user who has access to this site, as well as groups that have access to this site. So this is really the most complete list of security principals that have access somewhere in this site. The other URL that you can get to, and let me tweet this for you as well. Gives you what's called the all people view. And there's no link to this anymore, there used to be. But as an administrator, you can get to these lists. And you can see the difference here is we're seeing only users, and we're seeing more information about the users. We're not seeing groups. So what we start seeing in here is what's going on behind the scenes. And there's a couple of interesting things I want to point out to you, one of which is this guest contributor. This represents one of your external users. And behind the scenes, this is one of those things that's associated with daniel.f.holm@gmail.com. This is how it's represented in the site collection. Also, as soon as you share with external users, you get two additional groups behind the scenes in SharePoint. One of them is the Everyone group, and the other one is the Everyone Except External Users group. And those are used by SharePoint to manage certain security capabilities. I would not recommend deleting any of these or necessarily tweaking them. These are new enough features that people haven't beat them up yet. And if you are really curious and you've got a test environment to work with, beat it up. Don't do it in your production environments. Let them be, but I did want to point these out to you. And as you share with additional external users, you'll actually get additional guest contributors in your people list. As we saw earlier, you can go back to your access requests and see who actually, this is the more administrator-friendly look at those. So users are defined at the site collection level. What creates a user is when you add a user to a group, when a user shares with another user, so either one of those will create a user. The one other thing that creates a user is if a user is in an Active Directory group that has permissions to a site, and the user comes to the site and actually does something to change the site, all of a sudden an object will appear for that user. And I don't have time to demonstrate this, so let me just talk through this because this is an important concept here. It's going to help us understand Active Directory groups later. Let's say you have the sales site. You've taken the sales group in Active Directory and put it in the sales members group to give all those salespeople permission. So instead of putting all the individual salespeople in, you've just put the sales group from Active Directory in your sales members group. Fine. All your salespeople now have permission to the site. They can contribute to the site. As each individual salesperson goes to the site and actually does something that changes the site, all of a sudden a user object will appear for that one salesperson. So over time, your user list will start to grow as users make changes. What kinds of changes? Obviously, uploading a document or a list item, modifying a document or list item, anything that is audited, creating alerts on a site, anything where all of a sudden the site has to actually associate the user with something in that content database, all of a sudden the user object will appear. So over time, that user list will occur. So keep in mind that if you put users in a group, an Active Directory group, and then put them in the site, the user will have, there'll be no visibility that the user exists until the user actually does something, until they create an alert, modify an object on that site. So that then takes us to the next bit, which are our groups. And SharePoint groups obviously are collections of users. They're defined at the site collection level as well. Even if it looks to you like you're creating a group in a subsite, it actually is being created at the top of the site collection, and we saw it in that user information list. And as you know, there's a couple of default groups with default permissions dependent on your site definition. Users, now the one of the key benefits of SharePoint groups is that they can include users from any authentication provider. So one of the questions I've heard already is, should I just assign permissions directly to Active Directory groups? The answer is, fine, it'll work today. But what happens tomorrow when all of a sudden a different business scenario comes up and you really need to allow a user to sign in with a Google account or a Microsoft account or a forms-based authentication or some sort of partner SAML authentication like Active Directory Federated Services? All of a sudden you have users coming from different authentication providers. Those can't be nested in Active Directory groups. Those can only go into SharePoint groups. And so that's one of the reasons why it's good to use SharePoint groups at the lowest to assign permissions to, is because once you've assigned permissions to a SharePoint group, you can put users in there or groups from Active Directory, but then it gives you the flexibility of adding users from other authentication providers over time. And that then leads to one of the questions that's been asked a couple of times here, which is, as I put it shortly, to nest or not to nest. Should we put Active Directory users into Active Directory groups into SharePoint groups, or should we just put Active Directory users directly into SharePoint groups? And this is a really fundamental question, and I've got the answer for you. You may not like it, but I've got the answer. It comes from really understanding the advantages and disadvantages of each option. The advantages of putting an Active Directory group in a SharePoint group is, first, it gives the user permissions. If a user is in the AD group and the AD group is in the SharePoint group and the SharePoint group has permissions, the user has permissions. And obviously, it's a very easy way to manage role-based access across your IT environment, because that same Active Directory group that now has permissions to SharePoint might also have permissions to a file share, to an Exchange mailbox, to another application, obviously. It also gives you the ability of doing group-to-group nesting. In Active Directory, one group can belong to another, which gives you some flexibility in your modeling. And last but not least, there's a small technical point that you want to keep in the back of your mind, which is by nesting AD groups into SharePoint groups, it reduces the impact on your SharePoint search crawl. Now, what that means is when you put the AD group in the SharePoint group, crawl happens and calculates the ACLs on resources in the site. As you add users to that group, SharePoint doesn't know. It doesn't care. So the crawl is happy. Nothing happens. If, however, you add a user directly into the SharePoint group, each time you change that SharePoint group, it triggers a crawl of the content that is associated with that group. So depending on the scope that's involved, it may be a very large site collection gets a huge crawl just because you added a user to a group that had permissions to that scope. So by nesting, it does reduce the impact on SharePoint search crawl. I'm not sure that that's the most salient fact, but in some environments it would be. And if you're interested in this, Kirk Evans, who works for Microsoft PFE, has a really wonderful blog entry. The link is on the slide for you to learn more about that specific element. But there are also some disadvantages of nesting groups in groups, the first of which is that there are some scalability concerns. When you start, when you think about a site, it makes real sense to say, let's take the sales group and give it permissions to the sales site. At the high levels, that makes sense. But as you go down and you start creating subfolders or assigning permissions to documents, at some point down there, you're going to start using individual users or SharePoint groups rather than going back to your Active Directory team and asking for your 10,000 and first group to support security in SharePoint. It will eventually break down. You will eventually not use Active Directory groups, and that's good to keep in mind. Also, there's limited visibility of the user. If you have users in Active Directory groups and Active Directory groups in SharePoint groups, you don't get to see those users in the site until they make a change. You won't get to see that the site is shared with Dan, who's a salesperson, because all you'll see is that it's shared with the sales group. And users who don't have access to Active Directory tools won't be able to know who's on their team and who has access to the site. Probably most importantly, you lose some self-service functionality, which we'll talk about in just a bit. And most importantly, you lose collaborative functionality. There are certain bits of collaborative functionality in SharePoint that require the user to be in a group. For example, certain alert behaviors, assigning workflows, task assignment, a lot of things about how the people picker works. Depending on how you've configured your environment, and there are a lot of variables, you might find that certain things just don't work if you have put a user in an Active Directory group versus directly in a SharePoint group. So there are some big pros and there are some big cons. Now, if we boil those down, my guidance is start by understanding the two extremes. Let's start with your intranet. Your intranet is a big site. Lots of people have access to it. I would never suggest that you add all 10,000 employees to the intranet members group. That would be ridiculous. Sure, you'll put an AD group into that members group, something like domain users. And that kind of makes sense. Then you have easy access of management to that intranet and lower impact of membership changes to your search crawl. Then you go to the other extreme, which is your small team sites, your collaboration sites. In those sites, it's very common that the business owner of that site wants to know who has access. They want to see that visibility. They want to see each other. They want to be able to use Link to chat with each other. They want to be able to email each other. They want to be able to assign tasks to each other. And so they really need that collaborative functionality and visibility that only comes from putting users directly into the SharePoint group. So on the two extremes, you've got definitely put AD groups in the SharePoint groups and definitely put users in the SharePoint groups. In the middle, there's a big gray area, and you just have to decide where the tipping point is for each business workload, where visibility and functionality starts outweighing ease of use of centralized management. And all along the way, you have to start thinking about search crawl. Now, in an ideal world, the way I would approach this was to synchronize groups, where if I'm going to hire a salesperson, that person goes into the AD group for sales, and that same person goes into the sales members site of the sales team site. That would be an ideal world, and you can do that with PowerShell pretty darned easily. So that would be an ideal world, always keeping in mind, you know, is it going to impact search crawl? But don't give that too much thought, because I haven't seen too many customers that became a huge problem for. So PowerShell can allow you to synchronize groups. And I've done that with some of my customers where we've got PowerShell scripts that run every few minutes that scan particular groups and make sure that any changes are being replicated to SharePoint or vice versa. Sometimes there's a team site where it's nice to let the SharePoint business owner add users to the SharePoint group and then replicate those into an Active Directory group so that the same user has access to a file share. So different types of synchronization can be done in some slick ways. So he's asking about caching of groups, and I believe I've heard about this issue. If I recall correctly, it is not about access to the resource, but it is about how things show up in the index. Yeah, I've heard about this 24-hour default, but it's not, and you're right, but it's not, there are very specific scenarios where it happens. In most cases, if you add a user to a group, they'll instantly have access. If you remove them, they instantly won't. But there, you're right, there are some nuances, and I just don't remember what they are right off the top of my head right now. Yeah, I don't remember. But shoot me an email, and I will, and I'll write a little blog article about it and send it to everyone, because that's a great issue, and I want to add that to the presentation. But it's not something that is generally causing people huge amounts of pain. Now let's look at permission levels briefly. At the permission levels level, we have talked about common permission levels like full control, design, contribute, and read. There are a couple of permission levels here that warrant some explanation. The first of which is edit. Edit is a new permission level in SharePoint 2013. It is equivalent to contribute plus manage lists. So Microsoft wanted to give a new permission level that allows users to create and modify lists, but doesn't allow them to do some of the things that design allows them to do, like change permissions. So it's a middle ground there. Another permission that warrants an explanation is view only. View only is a permission that allows you to read a document library, for example, and see everything in it, but not be able to actually open the items in it. So typically, this is applied at a list or library level so people can see the list but not see the details of the items. And then there's limited access. And this one causes people a lot of grief. I've heard some people laugh. What happens is if you do a granular assignment of permissions, let's say you assign permissions down at a document library level, and you give a user only permission to that document library, when the user goes to that document library, the view of that document library is created by looking at the style sheets and the master pages and pulling together other things outside of that document library. And in order to get to those pieces, SharePoint automatically gives that user limited access permission at the site collection level. So each time you assign a specific permission, whoever you're assigning it to gets an account, gets a permission at the site collection that says limited access. Don't delete those. I've had administrators just, let me just clean those up. And all of a sudden, it messed up people's functionality. So that's one of those things that I wish there were a way to just hide it in the view so it didn't bother us so much. But if you do see it and it bothers you, don't change it. That's there for a reason. The details on these permission levels are on TechNet in the articles linked on this slide. Now, these permission levels are each collections of individual permissions defined at the site collection and managed by site collection administrators. There are a couple of times you might want to create specific custom permission levels. We'll take a look at how to do this in a demo rather than at the slide here. So we're going to look at a couple of examples. And I think the site we've been working with, because it's an old demo site, actually has some of these. If we go into Site Settings and Site Permissions, we can click Permission Levels, and we get a list of our permission levels. Now, I'm going to create a scenario where I want users to be able to add and modify documents or content but not delete it. To do that, I can take the existing contribute permission level, which contains all of these small permissions, and I'm going to copy this permission level and create a new permission level called contribute without delete. And all I'm going to do is remove the delete items permission. Now I've created a new permission level. That permission level can now be assigned to any group or user for any scope in my environment. Another example is managing checkout. The scenario here is users checked out a document, they then go on vacation and forget to check it in, and someone else needs it. That has to then be escalated to a site collection administrator or someone with full control to check in the document on behalf of the user who forgot to do that. Sometimes you want to delegate that operation to the manager for that user. To do that, we'll create an override checkout permission. And to do that, we only need one permission, which is called override list behaviors. In SharePoint 2010, it was called override checkout. In 2013, it has a little bit of a different name. And now we can assign this permission, called override checkout, to the managers of the department for a specific document library where checkout is enabled. So there are some good scenarios where we can modify those permissions to give us some new support, some new scenarios. And last but not least, at the security scope level, we already know that you take your security scope, which can be any one of the scopes we've talked about, and you can break inheritance at any level. And when you break inheritance, you now have explicit permissions. And those explicit permissions are then inherited by child objects. Inheritance can be reinstated, and thereby losing all your explicit permissions. Use inheritance wherever possible, and we'll see a couple of reasons why here. And if you need to understand the results of these permissions, keep in mind that SharePoint permissions are different than file system permissions. On an NTFS file system, when you look at a document, it is getting a combination of inherited permissions and explicit permissions. In SharePoint, it is either explicit or inherited. There's no combination. So once you've broken inheritance and assigned permissions on a document, if you add a user to the top of the site, that user will not have access to that document. The inheritance does not dribble down. There's no partial inheritance. You also don't need what NTFS file systems call traverse folder permissions. A user only needs access to what they're going to try to get to because they're going to get to it with a link. It's not like a file system where they're clicking through folders to get to something. They're just going to a specific URI. That's all the permissions they need. And you can check permissions using the effective permissions button in the advanced interface. So if you want to say, what does Alex have rights to, you can look at check permissions. Now, one little nuance, and I know we're out of time, so we're going to cover this quickly and then close this up. One little nuance to keep in mind is that when you break inheritance, you are immediately impacting the richness of your search. And here's what happens. When you add security to a document library, for example, and you break inheritance so that a group does not no longer has permission to that document library, those users will not see that document library. They won't be able to go to that page, and life will seem to be fine. The problem comes when you've got a web part page that includes a view of that library. So let's say, for example, that we had set permissions on this document library that prevent the sales team from getting it. The sales team won't be able to see that document library. That's fine. But if we edit our page at the top of the site and we add a view of that document library, where's my list part here? There we go, app part. There we go, document. Ah. All right, so all I've done here is I've added a view of that document library to the home page, which is a web part or an app part wiki page on my site. The problem here is that when a salesperson comes to the site directly, they won't see the document library, and that's fine. But what about search? Search is going to crawl this page and index everything on it. It's going to see the names of the documents. However, the permissions associated with the index of this page are going to be the permissions on the page. So if the sales team can come to this page, the sales team will see this page in their results. Now, and those results may contain some of the names of the documents because search crawled it all as one page. So there's a potential for security breach. So as an example, imagine that one of these documents is called a list of all the salespeople we're going to fire. Now, again, salespeople wouldn't see it if they came to the page, but Index would catch that and would potentially expose the name of that document. So in order to prevent that potential security leak from happening, as soon as you break inheritance anywhere in a site collection, these pages stop being indexed. Index will not crawl your ASPX pages if there is any broken inheritance in the site collection in order to ensure that web parts don't leak information to users who shouldn't see it. And you can actually see this setting in the site settings box, or sorry, in the site settings page under search settings. Whoops, that's not it. Let me remind myself where that. Where are we? What was that? Oh, yeah, there we go. Thank you. No, that's not it either. Anyway, since we're out of time, I'll mention it. In the site settings, I'm just stressed out because I'm out of time. There's an option that says do not index ASPX pages if inheritance is broken. You can re-enable that so that if inheritance is broken, ASPX pages are indexed, but you have to be aware of the potential risk you're taking. And so this is yet one more reason. Oh, that's the thing we're looking for, search and offline availability. That is one of the reasons why it's a best practice to manage inheritance within a site collection. Just have a site collection that has a unique set of permissions that works for everything in it. That's an ideal world. So with that, then, I'm going to have to scoot out and get to a close here. Let me jump down. There are a couple of last security notes that I'd like to close with here that are common questions here. We've seen that you can assign permissions to securable objects as granular as an item or document, and there are other features in SharePoint that take this to even further. Records management features, information management policies, and information rights policies create an effect of security that go beyond the authorization components that we've been looking at in this session. What you cannot secure in SharePoint are columns. You're not allowed to say in a list or library, this column has certain permissions on it. That is for performance reasons, and Microsoft's product team has told me in so many words, over our dead body, will you ever have column-level security in SharePoint? There are ways to get around it, though. There's conditional formatting, where you're basically hiding the column, not securing it. There are related lists, which is one of my favorite ways of doing this, where you have the information instead of in one list, in two separate lists, and you have a lookup column that sucks information in, that information will not appear if users don't have access to the other list. So you're basically saying, these columns are visible to everyone, that's list A. These columns are visible to a subset of everyone, that's list B. And we tie them together with related lists or with views, where when we select an employee in our HR record, it pulls up their private information. And it's only going to pull that up if you have access to that private information with connected web parts. There's also third-party solutions that give you the effect of column-level security, but all of them are pushing SharePoint into a space that really wasn't designed to do. So try to find workarounds when you have business scenarios that make it seem like you should have column-level security. Also remember that the audiences feature is not security. Audiences is a feature that allows you to push content into users' faces that they already have access to make it more visible and discoverable, but it is not a security feature. And there's lots of things in SharePoint that require you to go beyond the out-of-box features. If you want to get into rich auditing capabilities, if you want to monitor your environment for change, all of those things require PowerShell configuration and scripts or third-party tools. And there are some excellent third-party tools in the expo hall that allow you to enforce policy and security. And so my feeling is, in any sophisticated SharePoint environment, you're going to want to have security management tools to allow you to do some of the things that we all need to do, including adding users to a group in one place and having them automatically go elsewhere, being able to remove a user when they're terminated, being able to hire a new user and say, that user needs the same permissions as Mary. All of those kinds of things we do in a real business scenario across a distributed SharePoint environment are either going to drive you crazy, force you to write ridiculous PowerShell scripts, or open up your wallet a little bit and get a third-party tool. And honestly, those third-party tools pay for themselves when it comes to security management. So it's a category of tools I highly recommend you look at. So with that, we are out of time. I will be more than happy to stay up here and answer questions, but we need to wrap up for the sake of the people watching this on recording. My contact information is on the slide. I will have the slide deck along with the small changes I made at my URL. You'll also be able to download the slides from ComNet. Thank you guys very much for coming, and enjoy your evening.